Well, now on Sunday night, the International Staff Band of the Salvation Army have just concluded a national tour of Australia, and their musical director, Dr. Stephen Cobb, popped into our Melbourne studios for a chat about the band and their music. And we'll begin with a little excerpt from one of their most popular works on this tour, Fire in the Blood, a play on words, of course, of the Salvation Army motto, Blood and Fire. The Blood by Paul Lovett Cooper. That's just a hint of the sound of the International Staff Band of the Salvation Army, whose tour to Australia climaxed with a concert at Melbourne's Robert Blackwood Hall just last weekend. The musical director of this marvellous combination is Dr. Stephen Cobb. Stephen, thanks for joining us on Sunday night.
You're welcome, John.
Fire in the Blood, it is, of course, a play on the motto of the Salvation Army, Blood and Fire, a movement of which you've been a member all of your life.
That's true, yes. And my dad and my grandfather and my great-grandparents too.
The Salvation Army started off as a sort of evangelical outreach of Methodism at a time when lots of things were new. Getting organised as an army, a military force, was a very new thing in Protestant Christianity. And just the brass band itself was new at the time. The instruments had only come together around the same time that the Salvation Army was coming into being. So it's almost as though you're sort of a natural fit.
Yes, I mean, the development of instruments was, as you say, just a little bit before. And I think, looking back at the history of the Salvation Army, I suspect that William Booth happened on the whole brass band thing by chance. I mean, it was the Fry family down in Salisbury that kicked it all off and realised that there was real potential for evangelistic thrust with it. And it really took off from there. And of course, in concert too, where we had our very first formal Salvation Army band.
I'm told he had to be. There was a little bit of convincing had to be done. That he was a bit wary of organised musical groups, choirs as much as brass bands.
My research would suggest the same, but to his credit, he saw the potential and he went with it. He was also one would imagine from what I've read that he was a little bit of a controller too, which I think has been quite a good thing for the Salvation Army, because within the first 20 or so years of the Salvation Army, we had our own publishing company, we were setting up an instrument factory, we'd got our own shop, and so there was a level of control in it all.
The interesting thing about that, of course, is it enabled the Salvation Army and its music to spread worldwide. As the movement spread, so the music spread. It had a sort of closed market, a global market around the world.
That's very true. And in some ways that's bitten us a little bit, because during my formative years, right up to about 20 years ago, there was a sense outside the Salvation Army that we were a little bit protectionist, too protectionist about our music. Thankfully, international leadership made the decision to open our music to non-army groups, and I think that's done a lot to allay some of those anxieties. But I think there was a period where the army was seen as a very introspective movement.
Well, that opens up a couple of questions. But first, let's deal with that one about the openness of army music, because these days, in the world of the brass band, and it's still an international movement, and you've got groups like the Black Dyke Band and the Corey Band and the Grimethorpe Band known widely to the general public, when you look at their records and their CDs, you see as much Salvation Army music as you do their music.
I'm not quite sure that I would agree with that, but you do see more evidence of Salvation Army music being used by non-army groups. It was interesting for me to go to New Zealand a little while ago to adjudicate their national finals, which I suppose in itself is interesting that a few years ago that wouldn't have happened, but listening to the sacred section, and nearly all the music was Salvation Army music.
Salvation Army music matured very quickly, and it was probably because of this closed world market that it had among its own members, going from simple hymn tune arrangements and simple marches. By the 1930s and 1940s, it had begun to hold on to the centrality of that gospel song, but develop it in ways which merited comparison with some of the best of contemporary English composition going on at the time.
I would agree with that. Certainly during that period, it seems to me that the original music for brass band was almost mainly, almost exclusively coming from within the Salvation Army. Of course, we were very lucky during that period to have a very young Eric Ball in our movement, and he was prolific and clearly was an influential character, because other people were emerging too. But Eric Ball was pivotal, I think, during that period to our relative success and developing our music beyond just the hymn tune arrangement.
And of course, Eric Ball these days is regarded generally internationally as the father of modern brass band music.
That would be the majority view in England for sure, yes.
Yeah. Well, let's take an example of the work of Eric Ball. Perhaps you could offer us a selection of what you think might be an extract from his work. You've recently recorded a history of brass band of Salvation Army brass band music in a series called the Heritage Series. If you were to choose an Eric Ball item out of this, one that we could perhaps only spend 3 or 4 minutes with.
Oh, that's a really tough call. I suppose I would still regard Resurgam as one of his outstanding pieces, and any time I'm conducting it or listening to it, it still elicits a very emotional response from me.
Well, let's hear perhaps the last 3 to 4 minutes of Resurgam, where that original melody is stated once again and takes us to its glorious conclusion. Well, perhaps I'll take a liberty here. We'll hear one from a non-army band playing it, the Black Dyke Band, from their CD Black Dyke Gold. Resurgam, Eric Ball. Eric Ball, The Last Few Moments of Resurgam, I Will Arise, a piece that is seen by many as moving the brass band from concerts in the park to the Sirius Concert Hall around the world. Our guest is Dr. Stephen Cobb, bandmaster of the International Staff Band of the Salvation Army, who recently toured Australia. Stephen, it's quite a remarkable piece of work, isn't it?
Yes, it's a wonderful, wonderful piece of music. And I think the quality of the piece for me is that every time you open the score, there is still something new to find. And that really, in my experience, is only found with great, great music.
Let's move on a little and talk about, you suggested that the Salvation Army benefited from its music becoming open to a wider world. That openness to the wider world also, of course, marked a time when the Salvation Army was internally changing too. The music was being less used for evangelical purposes and took on an element of the concert stage. And music itself proliferated. Salvation Army music, perhaps from the 1940s on, or perhaps later, perhaps the 1960s on, became something that was really genuinely about, look, there is virtue in this music for its own sake.
I'm not sure that I would agree with that, actually, John, because I think as a Salvationist, our prime function as musicians is to bring honour and glory to God. And our music has a message, whether it's in a 3-minute hymn tune arrangement or a 12-minute major work. Now, there are exceptions to that with some of the transcriptions and arrangements of classical music. But even in our large-scale music, there is a storyline. I think the repertoire has changed, but I don't think our motivation for writing that music has changed at all. I hope it hasn't.
Let's go to another piece of music that perhaps illustrates that, and that takes a simple piece of gospel song rather than an original theme and does something quite marvellous with it. And, of course, I'm thinking of the great arrangement of the beautifully simple song, Just As I Am Without One Plea. The evangelicals around the world would know it. It's almost cliched as the Billy Graham rally song. Yet here, in the midst of Salvation Army repertoire, written in the, I think, probably the 1930s, yes, is a version that could be pure Elgar.
It's a stunning piece of music. Interestingly, we've just reintroduced it to our Sunday ministry. And it's quite remarkable how people listening to this for the first time are profoundly moved by the music. Even those who don't understand or know the words or are not familiar with the words, it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of music.
Just As I Am, the International Staff Band of the Salvation Army. Just As I Am, an arrangement by somebody who didn't write all that much, but when he wrote for music of great significance, Wilfred Heaton.
Yes, I couldn't in any way claim to know Mr. Heaton particularly well. He did come and lead a staff band rehearsal when I was still playing, and he seemed to me quite a shy, introspective gentleman, but clearly had very strong views on how his music should be played. We played, actually, Just As I Am for him, and the band wanted to go at a slightly different tempo to him, and he very politely said, gentlemen, I've written this as a crotchet 60, and that's what I want. and we played it. It seemed extraordinarily slow, I have to say, but he had a view on what he wanted, and I learned a lesson on that occasion, because some composers just write a score and their score is quite utilitarian, whereas others are quite prescriptive as to what they want. But Mr. Heaton certainly wanted it in a particular way and in a particular style, and that's what we did for him.
We're talking with Stephen Cobb, the bandmaster of the International Staff Band of the Salvation Army, recently in Australia, about Salvation Army music and its place in the life of the Salvation Army. That Wilfred Heaton piece we've just spoken about gave us an example of music that clearly comes out of a devotional setting, a meditative devotional setting, yet really its influences are as broad as the concert hall stage. As I say, it could be pure Elgar. There's a sense in which every piece of Salvation Army music, as you quite rightly said, has to have some sort of religious centre to it. Every piece still has a tune with words associated with it. How important is that still with people these days? You think in using music for worship that the words still need to have a direct association. What is the link between words and music when you are essentially conducting music? You're not there to conduct congregational singing.
It's a fascinating debate. I was reminded a few days ago when we met up with Bill Broughton, and it reminded me of a conversation I had when he was living in California over 30 years ago. And he was talking about the way in which he translated his skills from Salvation Army to the industry that he was working in. And he said to me, Steve, he said, of course, Salvation Army music is film music. So for me to make the switch was easy, he said, because Salvation Army music, we're telling a story. And I think if we're serious about music ministry in the Salvation Army, which I believe we are, we do need the words. And I think a lot of our music, during the time we were on the tour, I said to the congregations and the audiences, you could listen to this on two levels. If you are Christians or if you're Salvation Army people, you have the words, and most times we had the words on the screen. But if you're people who've just come to a concert, you can accept this music just as pure music. And so I think we do have that with the Salvation Army, but, you know, we do have to, I think we are still bound by word association, and I think it's right that we are. But it's a huge discussion. I'm just scratching the surface here on it. But yeah. I do think we do need to be word association and bound by that, but not strangled by it.
Where do you think Salvation Army music is headed in terms of the life of the Salvation Army itself? I mean, brass band music started off as the pop music of the day, and the Salvation Army captured that ethos of the popular music of the day. These days, it's niche music. It's very high-quality niche music, but it's niche music. Is there a tension here between the ultimate purposes of the movement in making the mission of the Salvation Army relevant to the widest possible world, and the place of the brass band as an interesting but nevertheless small niche in the people's general musical experience?
Again, this is a fascinating question, and you're hypothesizing very articulately, if I'm allowed to say so. It's a huge debate. My gifting is within the Salvation Army is music. In my role as territorial music director, I am wanting to give opportunity for expressions as well as brass banding. I think you're probably right in suggesting it's a bit of a niche market. I suspect it's more of a niche market here than in England, but nevertheless, brass bands are less prevalent in England than they used to be. I think all we can do, those of us who have a passion for brass bands and believe in the potential to affect people's hearts and minds through the medium of the brass band, is to make sure that whatever we do, it is relevant, is engaging, and is of the best quality that we can muster. I do think in the church context we underestimate the potential for a brass band. It is just about the most inclusive group that we have in the church. It's all age, it's all ability. It can play everything from a hymn tune right the way through to a 14-15 minute major work. We can play indoors, we can play outdoors. It's a wonderful resource for the church to have. And I suspect there are those within our movement who beat up on it a little bit without quite understanding what the model can offer. I think they look at a specific example or a specific leader who's maybe not quite cutting it, and that affects their judgment. But I think the model still has great scope within the Salvation Army, but I wouldn't pretend to suggest that it is the only model available to the Salvation Army. I think the whole field of contemporary music, the whole area of creative arts, is an untapped resource that the Salvation Army has yet to explore.
Stephen Cobb, bandmaster of the International Staff Band of the Salvation Army, just finished a tour of Australia and heading off home to England. Stephen Cobb, we opened with a piece of music called Fire in the Blood. I'd like to conclude with the last couple of minutes of Fire in the Blood, because I think it shows this band at its best. This band basically doing something that's devotional at its heart, yet with a composer like Paul Lovett Cooper, is utterly spectacular. And I believe this has become the sort of the sort of motif tune of the band over the last 4 or 5 years.
It's a quite extraordinary piece. I think in all my time as a musician in the Salvation Army, I don't think there's been a piece that has been as popular right around the world as this one. It's high octane, very emotional, sometimes sentimental, but very exciting. And the band is still not tired of playing it, so we keep featuring it.
Stephen Cobb, it's been great of you to give us your time on Sunday night. We trust that as you fly out of the country, you could have a few weeks' rest before you get back into it and continue the worldwide mission of the International Staff Band. Stephen Cobb from the Salvation Army, thanks so much for joining us on Sunday night.
Thank you, John.
Here we go then, Fire in the Blood. We started with the first couple of minutes. Let's go out with the last couple of minutes of Paul Lovett Cooper's Fire in the Blood.
Listening.